If you're looking to build your business, become a better leader, and develop an authentic brand culture, then you're going to need hard skills, strategies, and tactics. But in order to make the business and brand thrive, you also need to consider soft skills, developing yourself and becoming a conscious leader. Now, in today's episode, I'm joined by Kelly Campbell, a leadership coach, working with creative and technology leaders, helping them to transform both their life and their agency to grow their brand. Welcome to the Unified Brand Podcast, brought to you by Elements Brand Management, a weekly brand building and brand strategy podcast to help you unlock your brand's potential, stand out from the competition, and create impact. So today we're joined by Kelly Campbell, a conscious leadership coach working with creative and technology leaders, helping them to transform both their life and their agency. She's also the co-founder of Consciousness Leaders, a global collective of diverse and trusted experts, helping organizations create positive, lasting change. Great to have you on the Unified Brand Podcast, Kelly. It'd be good to learn more about yourself, what you do, and Consciousness Leaders.
Yeah, Chris, thank you so much. I love your podcast, and I'm really, really excited to be here. So happy to share a little bit about what I do and, of course, Consciousness Leaders, because that's something I'm super, super passionate about. So I don't know where you want me to start, but a bit about what I do is I say that I work at the nexus of conscious leadership and agency growth, specifically for creative and technology leaders. So that could be people who are owning marketing and advertising agencies. That could be people who are specialists who are owning firms that are, let's say, website development firms, branding, experiential agencies, anything under the realm of what I consider creative or technology. And of course, sometimes, most of the time, those two things are really intertwined, right? Especially in the agency world. So what I do is I work specifically with the leader or leaders of those agencies. And, you know, my approach is a little unique in this space because I'm not just a business coach. I'm not just helping them with business development strategy and positioning and all of those things. Yes, I do those, but I like to start earlier. And what I mean by starting earlier is I can hand you a tool or coach you or train you on some kind of hard skill or a different methodology or framework. But if you're bringing some of your past trauma, we can call it, some of your past wounding, some of your the things that have informed the way that you think, speak, and behave, you're bringing those things into the business. I need to start there, right? Because if I don't start there, all of the other stuff is just going to revert back to your old sort of habitual habits and patterns and things like that. So I'm talking about everything from how leaders interact with their team members, how they price contracts, every single piece of running an agency and any business, to be honest with you. But running an agency obviously has myriad parts, right? So every part of that is impacted by who we are and how we show up as leaders. And so if we're not healing, I don't think that anyone can ever be totally healed, so I don't use the past tense, but if we're not actively healing as leaders, we can't show up in those ways that we want to be, which, you know, the ultimate goal is for us to become conscious leaders.
Definitely. I've experienced some things that have caused things like that in my professional life, and you do feel it. Like you said, anything from, like you said, pricing to just the way that you show up in meetings or for meetings, and it makes a massive difference. So I can totally understand the importance of going back to the beginning, like you said, focusing on that in order to help that person then develop through. So why specifically those kind of industries? What's the thing about those particular industries that you love to work with?
Oh, it's just my background. So I own a digital marketing agency that was focused on causes. So nonprofits, foundations, CSR initiatives, and some educational organizations. That was the ethos. That was the focus of the agency that I ran for 14 years. I ran that from age 22 to 36, and then I was able to sell it at 36, and I was like, great, what am I going to do now, right? I'm kind of unemployable, or that's what I told myself as a 36-year-old CEO, and I just kind of took a beat and thought, well, I've got all this expertise and all of this experience, and I know some stuff, and what could I possibly, you know, sort of bring to the table? And so I started thinking about, well, the people that would benefit from this are clearly the people who are currently walking in the shoes that I have walked in for the last 14 years. So that's kind of how it started. That's where I went directly into that industry. Obviously you had more like credibility just because you came from owning an agency and all of that. So I started in that realm doing consulting. which was much more focused on the things that we talked about before, that tactical scalability, profitability, like devoid of humanity almost. And then I realized pretty quickly, like, oh, I have a blind spot here. The results were fine, but I like to, you know, I'm a perfectionist, like all of us. So I was like, no, I want my case studies to be like amazing. And what is the blind spot that is the difference? What's the gap between the work that I'm doing with them and them actually being able to execute and implement this long-term once I'm gone? And I was like, oh, okay, I see there are like humanistic patterns that are happening that I have never addressed because that's not the work I do. And, you know, I just leaned in and I was like, okay, so maybe that's the work I'm gonna do now. And then it became so clear that the results were infinitely better. I mean, exponentially better, that I thought, oh, well, maybe, I mean, there's lots of business coaches and agency coaches out there that can help with biz dev strategies and profitability and positioning and all those things. And of course I can still do that, but my main focus is gonna be the conscious leadership stuff. And so I started getting more into educating myself and going through different trainings and experiences that would help me to be a more trauma-informed conscious leadership coach.
Sounds awesome. Yeah, because the number of times when you were obviously in a branding agency, when you go through a process with somebody, you can help them to, you can do a workshop, you can develop the brand, you can take them to a point. But then at some point, you have to hand that over, unless you're continually working with them, obviously in a consultancy point of view, but you have to hand it over to them. And like you said, sometimes that reverting back to, I don't want to say self, but you know, reverting back to that previous state can sometimes cause that those changes to just revert, can't they? So what do you love most about helping leaders transform their life and their agency?
Well, it's incredibly rewarding because, you know, yes, I'm helping them in the context of individual growth and transformation, and then that translates to the business. But we have to remember that as humans, like those are not the two only things that we have in our lives, right? Like, so all of the people that I'm coaching, they probably have spouses or children or other relationships in their lives. They have parents, they have, you know, all of these social groups and communities, personal passions. They have all of these really rich lives, or they want them to be more rich. I could say it that way. And so what's rewarding about it is that it's not just focused or not just a transformation for the self and the business. It really expands and extends so much beyond that. And so I'll give you a quick example. I'll hear something like, oh, you know how when we were talking about how I spoke to this employee the other day, I observed that I actually was talking to my wife in a similar way. And I caught myself and I rephrased it and reframed it. And it actually avoided a conflict. Whereas in the past, I would have not been so aware of that. And there would have been a kind of like an argument or something that would have ensued. And so when you start to see the translation between how healing in these ways really transcends just the business, it's incredibly rewarding. And then you think about what is the impact of that? Their marriage might be healthier. They're then modeling that healthier marriage for their children. And then, right, like, so it goes on and on. So I guess my quick answer would be, or short answer would be, the ripple effect. The rewarding part for me is the ripple effect.
It's amazing. I'm a trustee on a local charity that deals with mental health. And one of the things we talk about is that ripple effect, that community effect, where you help that one person. And then that sort of spreads out through the community from everything, like you said, from family to just when they go into a shop and they've got a different outlook and a different way of speaking that then pass on to that next person. Someone described to me before, is remember those things you used to have on desks that you pull the metal ball up and it just hits the ball and then the other ball goes up the other side and those things. It's like that. You're passing that, whatever you pass on, you're passing that on, and it's that chain effect. So it's an interesting way to think about it. So why is conscious leadership so important for businesses to adopt?
Well, I mean, the quick answer is that we don't have a choice, right? We're getting it from both sides as leaders. It's the consumers and customers who are demanding conscious leadership because they want to buy services and products from organizations that align with their values. So without even thinking about anything else, that would be enough of a reason, because if your values don't align with your customers, you won't have any customers and you will go out of business. Again, I'm keeping this very high level, but that's a pretty tight answer. And then when I say getting it from both sides, yes, it's the customers, but I say even more importantly, if you are a conscious leader, that means that you care about the people that are underneath your stewardship. Right. So if you think about, there's this thing that I talk about all the time, money follows value. And so, you know, if you think about this in a sort of a loop, right, a never-ending loop, the more that you focus on the value of your employees, meaning valuing them as humans, so making sure that they feel seen, heard, understood, valued, respected within the workplace, making sure that you're leaning into uncomfortable conversations, making sure that you're setting them up for success in terms of professional development or mental health in the workplace, right? Like, I think that's going to become something that a lot of organizations are going to have to lean into, especially following the pandemic, Black Lives Matter, on and on and on. It's just not an option anymore to say, I'm not going to lean into all of this. Like, I'm not going to support my people, because they will leave and it will be a mass exodus. We saw this with Basecamp. We saw this with Coinbase, and we saw this with multiple other businesses who had leaders who were like, yeah, no, we're just going to kind of bow out. We're going to say no more of these conversations in the workplace. We're going to remove your health benefits and just give you cash, because it's not our job to keep you healthy. When you have that kind of approach, it's no wonder why your employees would leave. And those companies will go out of business if they haven't already. I haven't actually checked up on it because I no longer have respect for their owners. So anyhow, it's not an option. Not only is it good for business, but if you think back to this, or if I could highlight this, like, money follows value cycle. So where I started saying before, you've really lean into value of the employees, right? As much as you can possibly support them, because that pays dividends. Not only is it the right thing to do as a fellow human, but then the employees are happier, they're more fulfilled, they're more productive, they execute better work or have more creative ideas. That means that they stay longer, you have less employee attrition. What happens with that? Then the clients are the recipients of that better work, right? They're the recipients of having a more consistent relationship with your employees. The clients stay longer. That means less client attrition, higher client retention. From there, then you've got clients who will refer more business because they're having a more positive experience. Through all of this cycle, there's trust that's accumulating and developing. So the relationships between your employees, your clients, et cetera, are all longer, and revenue is going up because the employees are more productive. They're probably finding more efficiencies or coming up with, like, even more innovative ideas. So your profit margin as the lagging indicator goes up. It doesn't make any sense to not do it this way, right? It's so clear. But I think that there has been this stigma around, how can I do right by my employees, do right by the environment, and turn a profit? And conscious leadership says, you don't have to choose one or two of those things. You can have all three.
Definitely. I think, like you said, it is, you know, seemingly really clear. And at the same time, you've got consumers today, especially younger generations who are coming through, who want to sort of work with brands or buy from brands that their values align with. And I think the importance of that and the importance of the internal team, like you said, feeling safe. I think when you were mentioning stuff, it got me thinking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
And people feeling safe and being slightly higher up in their organizations inside that pyramid. And when they do that, they feel like they can flourish and they can help to build that company. And I think that's a really good point, that we should all aspire to be more like that, I think. And you're going to get the most out of your employees that way, like you said, definitely.
I'm glad that you, can I just, like, pinpoint that? I'm glad that you brought up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because we've gotten so far away. And listen, there are lots of frameworks and things like that. Maslow's not the only one. And there are some people that have some issues with that. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about are basic human needs, right? Here, we're talking about the ones where we want to feel seen, heard, valued, loved, respected, a sense of belonging. Those are very, on the developmental scale, they're very childlike, right? But it's not like those go away as you become adults. And especially when most people are either unconscious or awakening, they're in the process of awakening, they are still in that developmental phase in some ways, right? Like the small versions of themselves, they're the ones that are running the show, right? Like, they're not healed yet. So they're in this process of, like, still needing those really basic human needs. And, you know, at this point, if employers are not thinking about things in this way, they're going to fall behind the eight ball pretty quickly, because, again, you're just getting it from both ends, from the values perspective and the employees.
So what main issues sort of hold agencies back from developing their brand?
From developing their brand. Well, my contention is that most things, whenever you talk about anything in a holdback situation, that's always fear. That language speaks of fear to me. So when an agency, I think what you're asking is like developing their brand from the standpoint of putting their authentic mark on things,
definitely.
Right? Is that what you mean? Okay.
Yep.
So yeah, it's fear. It's fear of, am I going to be ostracized in the market? Yes, I want to be differentiated, but do I want to be differentiated for my values or my services? And I think most of us in the agency world specifically play things really safe. There is a branding firm, they call it an intrinsic branding firm called Root and River out of, I think, Texas and Arizona. And I actually worked with them in doing some of the narrative work for consciousness leaders. And their kind of mantra for the work that they do is every brand is a spiritual experience. Now, if you think about that, it's a very strong and very compelling mantra, right? They have it right on the hero image of their homepage. And if you think about it, what they've done is they've actually done the perfect thing in terms of positioning. If someone were to need that kind of service, like branding, brand narrative, brand story, all of that kind of work, and the word spiritual didn't resonate, that client would disqualify themselves. If that language did resonate, which it did with me for consciousness leaders, I would immediately, within a millisecond, know that that was the right firm for me. And so, I mean, this is the big positioning discussion, right? But if you can be more authentic and sort of put yourself out there as an agency, I think it just shows that you have a little bit more self-confidence and a little bit more security within the organization, or maybe it's just a reflection of the leader or leadership team. But I think it all comes down to pulling in those ideal clients, right? And so if you're afraid and you want to kind of play it safe and shrink or stay small so that everyone else is comfortable, well, then you become a commodity, right? So if it's like, well, we're a WordPress web development firm and we work with small businesses. Okay, well, now you're one of like 27,000 firms that kind of are in that same commodity thing. And then it's a race to zero, right? Because there's nothing about you that speaks to values. There's nothing about that you that speaks to vertical expertise or personality for that perspective. So I do think that it's fear. It's fear that holds us back because we're a little unsure that if we really put our truth out there about who we are as an organization and the leaders behind that organization, for some reason, we're not going to be accepted. We're not going to develop business. And these are all just stories that we tell ourselves, because if you do your market testing and you do your surveying and you do all of the things that you should do when you're going to build a brand, then you shouldn't have to worry about it, right? And again, at the end of the day, strong positioning is always the answer.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it can be, like you said, it's the fear, but there's also that it can be hard, can't it, to understand and to try and uncover the real things that drive you and like what it is you're aspiring to be, I think sometimes. And some people just sort of push it to one side and think, well, I'm not going to put the time into that. I'm just going to focus on what I'm doing. And like you said, being one of many, as opposed to being that, doing the work and uncovering.
That's why, you know, if you have followed or read anything by David C. Baker, he says, you know, positioning, it really, it's like an act of courage. I don't know if he says courage or bravery, but it is, because you're drawing a line in the sand to say, this is who I am. And this is what I stand for. And this is what I'm great at. And if this speaks to you, then we might be a good fit for one another. And the more detail you can be about those things, which is really just that authentic, genuine, transparent messaging, you're going to allow prospects who are more ideal to qualify themselves just based on the messaging alone before you even have a conversation with them. And then you're going to allow the ideal prospects who do resonate with that, I'm sorry, the ones who are not ideal, to disqualify themselves. So you're saving yourself a ton of time in the discovery and sales process, right? Weeding out those ones who are just not going to be a good fit.
Definitely. Someone described to me before like Velcro, the idea of kind of two things just coming together. And yeah, that strong positioning and being able to define who you are and what you stand for is so crucial. People have the opposite mindset. They think if I'm everything to everyone, then I'm going to have more effective marketing, more effective, you know, more leads coming
in. Complete opposite.
Yeah.
There's so many stories I have around that, whether it was in my former agency or clients or even as a consultant. You know, if you had told me 5 or 6 years ago that I would have messaging on my LinkedIn profile that talked about me doing like conscious leadership from the standpoint of like trauma-informed shadow work and Buddhist psychology, I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about, because that is not anything I would ever put out on LinkedIn, especially as a quote-unquote professional platform. And it's who I am, and I attract the people who are self-aware enough to say, I know I need something different. I've been through the business coaches, some of the other, you know, even agency consultants, they don't focus on the human part, the emotional part of what's holding me back. I really think that that's where I need to dive into. And the people who are like, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole, I would never contact Kelly, that's okay, right? There are all these other coaches and consultants out there that are a great fit for them. I don't see competition from that standpoint. It's like, if you have strong positioning in your industry, there's enough business to go around for everyone.
Definitely. When you're saying shadow work there, you're talking, because that sounds really interesting to me. That made my ears break up. So is that, you're talking about like Jungian shadow?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool. A bit of a tangent, but how does that work with regards to sort of diving into that and uncovering that side of someone from a leadership perspective?
Yeah. So if you think about what we started talking about at the top of the show, all of the experiences that we had as children, right? From 0 to 7, some people say 0 to 12 or 14, those all imprinted us. They programmed us in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, none of us had this perfect childhood. We all went without some need being unmet or some friction in the attachment style with our primary parents or caregivers. So there was something that happened. And again, this is not like a blame game. This is just every single one of us, because there's no such thing as a perfect childhood, every single one of us have developed some kind of coping mechanisms and survival strategies when we were younger that we then bring into adulthood, right? And that's how we become the people who we think and speak and behave the ways that we do, whether we're business owners or not. And so shadow work is essentially going back and finding what are those experiences or what are those memories that are still living in the body and impacting the same repetitive behaviors, negative behaviors or thoughts or what have you, and going back and essentially kind of calling them out and healing them so that you start to change the narrative, right? So, you know, the difference that we talk about, like Brené Brown sometimes, the difference between shame and guilt, right? Like guilt is I did a bad thing. Shame is I am a bad person, right? Two very, very different things. And so, you know, if you still have shame in your body, or you had an attachment style that was a little bit more anxious or a little bit more avoidant because of the attachment that was developed with that primary parent, that's going to show up in your romantic relationships, in your relationships with your employees, clients even. So I know it sounds like these things are very disparate, but they're not at all. They're very intertwined. And again, that's why I feel like I don't have much competition, because no one wants to touch this stuff. It's that squishy, emotional, sort of messy stuff that everyone's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. That's like, you know, what I might be going to therapy for, right? And so my contention is I'm not a therapist. I'm not a clinical psychologist, but I have a lot of lived experience with this stuff and have been, you know, through traditional therapy and Buddhist psychology and shadow work coaches, and still work with a lot of these people. And so I've developed, you know, I wouldn't call it an expertise. I would say a lived experience that I can share. And I've started to be able to observe and notice when some of those things are showing up in the business from the agency leader's standpoint. And I can sort of connect those dots, right? And highlight that for them and just kind of create an invitation. You know, could this be, you know, that story that you told me that happened when you were 12? Could that be the reason why you said this to this employee? And it's just getting them to think about things a little bit differently. And if that seems like that might be possible, then we kind of dive into that memory together. And, you know, literally just on a Zoom call, we're closing our eyes, where I'm having the agency leader recount that memory, go into it, explain what was happening in that particular memory or event, trying to have them put themselves back into that smaller version of themselves and tell me what they were feeling, right? And then we might have them do the same thing over again, but either rewrite the narrative, or we might have them bring their adult self into that same scene so that we can actually make eye contact with the smaller version to say, is what you felt and experienced back then, is that reality from an adult vantage point? And so, you know, when you start to look at the difference between an emotional experience as a young person and the reality of the situation as an adult, you can start to see that, oh, I don't have to attach myself to that story anymore, because that was actually not reality. That was just my experience back then and what's true for me now. And so you start to do these little things one by one by one, because we all have many of these kind of experiences. And it could be, some of them are like one-time events, and some of them could be years and years long relationship with a particular caregiver. So it just depends on what the brand of the trauma were.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's amazing. Like I said before, I've had some trauma when I was younger, and I've done some similar things to that where you do that. And it is amazing and powerful how reframing those situations.
That's actually exactly what it is. It's reframing. Yeah. And I always sort of halfway joke around about, I wish that when I started that process that I had taken out some stock in Kleenex, because I would be a very rich person at this point.
Cool. So, I saw a piece of content you shared recently about conscious inclusion. Could you explain what this is and why it's important to businesses to think about?
Yeah. So you're talking about my podcast, Thrive, Your Agency Resource. I had Juan Cortez on the show. He is co-founder of a company called Matter of Culture, and they are basically like a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultancy represented by my other company, Consciousness Leaders. And what we talked about on that show was conscious inclusion specifically for agencies, because his background is all in the agency world, like WPP level agencies. And so conscious inclusion is this idea that, we all have, there's sort of unconscious bias that exists in the workplace and in many of our processes, in that environment. And so a lot of people in the conversation, we talked about the fact that a lot of people think of inclusion as something that you only talk about in the context of HR, right? Like human resources. And the reality is that conscious inclusion can be brought into all realms of the agency. So things like when you're working on a particular advertising campaign or any type of campaign, right? Who are you putting together as a team in order to come up with the creative and do the development and the copywriting and all these different things? And the reality is, if you have a non-diverse group of people working on something, there clearly are going to be blind spots. So if you're being really conscious about how you're creating that team and how you're putting that team together to make sure that you have multiple perspectives at the table, maybe someone from the BIPOC community, someone from the LGBTQ community, someone with disabilities. I mean, clearly, it would be fairly utopian to think that we, for every single campaign, we would have like a member of every type of like community or population. So, just based on the fact that at agencies, that in and of itself, just diversity among the team has been sort of an issue for a very long time. Now we see that, starting to become certainly much more of a conversation, and we do see a lot of action being taken there, but we have a long way to go. So that's one example. And then another example that Juan mentioned, which I thought was really, really interesting. He was talking about conscious inclusion from the standpoint of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And, artificial intelligence, as we know now, is kind of one of those things where you get out what you put in. So if you are not being really conscious about the inputs and the diversity and equity and inclusion of those inputs into the system, then what you're going to get out is something that is not inclusive. So we really have to have these kinds of conversations, especially as creatives and technologists, because it's really important. And this is how the whole entire system and structure will be able to change. And we have to have the conversations first.
Definitely. I never thought of it from that point of view with regards to the AI side of things.
I didn't either.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, definitely. Because like you said, what you put in is what you get out. And if there's a more of a shift towards AI and a lot of technological systems that are going to be running certain things, you need to have those people represented in that initial phase. Otherwise, it's not going to come out the other side of it, is it? So definitely. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. So what are the biggest misconceptions around developing a conscious brand you see most often?
Misconceptions around developing a conscious brand. I think this probably goes back to what I said before, that there is this big misconception around not believing that money follows value cycle. I couldn't possibly support my employees to the extent that I would want to and think about the environment and our carbon footprint and our impact there and turn a profit. It feels like I have to choose one, or that in order to be profitable, I have to scale back on probably both of those things. I can't possibly offer, you know, everything that I want to offer to my employees to make sure that they're healthy and make sure that they have paid time off and incredibly, which should be appropriate, maternity and paternity leaves and all of these different things, right? Like, I can't do that. I've got to somehow look at what is the bare minimum that I have to give them, because if I'm paying them and they're not working, right, this is just paid time off, then it's going to impact my profit margin. And while that might be true in a very, very short snapshot, right, if you're looking at like a 1 month or 2 month thing where you've got multiple employees out and, you know, you've got to hire more contractors in to get the work done, yes, your profit margin might suffer minimally for that short period of time. But that's what it is. It's short-sighted. Because if you lean in and you support those employees, they're only going to give that back to you, right? So very much the same as the way that we phrase the AI conversation, what you put in is what you're going to get out. So if you really lean in and support them the way that you should a fellow human being who is literally there growing your brand and building your business with you in a non-equity situation, yes, you should absolutely be leaning into that, because it's just good for business, right? Like, we've seen this with conscious capitalism. There have been so many companies that have kind of modeled this for us. And it's turning little by little, but for whatever reason, it's like, we just cannot believe it. We cannot believe it. And again, back to what I said earlier, it's not going to be an option pretty soon.
Definitely. I think it's interesting because people do business with people is one of the words, the things that gets thrown up a lot. And if you're a brand, I can't understand why you wouldn't have a humanist side in there, because people do business with people. So people want to connect with something that feels real, that feels deep, that has values, that has beliefs, that stands up for things, that, you know, champions things. Yeah, I think definitely people need to move towards.
There was a few years ago where there was some, I don't know what group it was, but some group was really trying to get rid of like the acronym of like B2B and B2C and literally just get rid of them completely and just call it H2H. And I thought it was brilliant. And I was like, why didn't this take off? You know, and it's because we're afraid. That's like so disruptive. If I'm a B2B marketing agency, how am I possibly going to now talk about what I do? Well, there are lots of words in the English language. I'm sure you can figure it out, right? Like, I don't know. I'm a little unapologetic about things like that. I like that disruption because I think we get so stuck in these antiquated ways of doing things. The fact that we still have RFPs, like, don't even get me started on that. It's the most antiquated thing in the entire world. It doesn't help anyone. And it's really to help a procurement department. It has nothing to do with the creativity and the innovation and human to human conversations about realistic budgets. You have clients that are self-prescribing what they need when you're hiring an expert to literally tell you that. I mean, I could go off on a whole tangent about RFPs, but again, it's just an example of this really antiquated way of doing things that, because we've been doing it for 50 years, this is how we're going to keep doing it. And you do see some agencies, and I deal with this sometimes. I have one client who's dealing with this right now. Some agencies that are saying, this is my positioning. I work with nonprofits and foundations and CSR initiatives. We have deep expertise in this area. I see that you put an RFP out and I'm happy that you would like us to respond to it. We don't respond to RFPs. If your director of communications would like to hop on a call so that we can start to help guide what is missing from that RFP and provide consultative support from that end, I'd be really happy to have a conversation. And you see more of that happening because agencies are saying, no, it doesn't work. An RFP is typically a race to the bottom and agencies don't want to be in a commodity space anymore. So, you know, it's changing little by little.
It's funny because I actually had an RFP yesterday I looked at and I had that feeling. It's a feeling of like, you're not connecting with anybody. There's this, yeah. And like you said, there's no thought of the expertise or what you can bring or how you could be creative with it. It's just, we need this. This is what we need. These are the things we need to do. And then you get weighted point scoring on what you bring back. It's just, yeah, crazy.
I mean, what if you think about it from that perspective, what if you answered all the questions right and your price was the lowest and all these things, but you were like a horrible person who was really difficult to work with. So now you've just gotten chosen for this RFP based on this weighted score, but the working relationship that's going to happen every single day, email communications, phone calls, maybe texting, maybe like Slack channel, whatever the modes of communication are, What if you were just like a really emotionally unintelligent person who was not good with other people? Now that company is stuck with you. So it just, like I said, I can go on a whole tangent about RFPs.
I was going to say as well, when you said it earlier on, I think H2H is a great name for an agency. We should trademark that one. Yeah, exactly.
My non-compete was over 2 years ago.
Yeah, let's do it. Go for it. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was awesome. Yeah. Cool. So what are some top tips you can give to the listeners today to help them improve their business and develop a more conscious approach?
Oh, that's a good question. So for me, there are some prerequisites. It comes down to self-awareness, developing that self-awareness. If you don't know whether you're self-aware or not, you're probably not. But really, like, just taking a minute and seeing if you can put some kind of pause in between, you know, if you have an emotional reaction response to anything, an email that comes in from a client or an employee telling you something or whatever the case may be, see if you can take a moment between the reaction and your response. That pause will actually give you a tremendous amount, because that in and of itself is self-awareness. And of course, it's so much more than that. You know, I know it sounds cliche at this point because everybody sort of preaches meditation, but I do think that meditation is a really good way to develop self-awareness. Because again, what you're doing in that meditative state is you are pausing and you're reflecting and you're giving yourself more of the, in Buddhist terms, it would be more of the being time versus the doing time, right? And, you know, just from that perspective, we were not built as humans to be doing all the time. If you think about us back in like the days of the cavemen, right? Like, we had short bursts where we would go and either run away from or try to kill some cat, right? Or some animal. And those were short bursts. And so that happened, you know, let's call it 7 to 10 minutes out of a week. And then you killed the animal or saved yourself or what have you. The rest of the time you were foraging, you were creating the fire, you were communicating in some way with, you know, the rest of your group. And so there was so much more of that being and sort of stillness or slowing down. I did a podcast episode with Moga Dot, who is the author of Solve for Happy, and it was called The Power of Slowing Down. It was one of the, I think it was episode 100, and I think it was one of the best episodes that I've ever had on the podcast. And this is what the whole conversation was about, is that we were not meant to be doing all of the time. So back to your question, self-awareness is a prerequisite. Healing trauma is a prerequisite. You cannot be the kind of leader that we need today if you are not actively healing trauma. It's just, that's the end of it. I mean, that's, of course, that's only my contention, but I've seen the results, you know, and lots and lots and lots of people have seen those results. Vulnerability is a big one. Not needing to know all of the answers and being vulnerable to say, hey, team, I value you and I don't have all the answers. I need you to help me figure things out. How do we run this better? You know, bring your voices to the table, right? All of those things. Empathy and emotional intelligence. I think these are now pretty commonly like the hallmarks of conscious leadership. And then I would say the fifth one is probably sort of lighting the way for others. So if we can learn to like drop our egos at the door and realize that yes, we're in a leadership role, we're in an ownership role or founder role, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to be at the top of the org chart. I'm a big fan of org charts that have the CEO at the bottom, because for me, the role of the owner or the leader is actually to raise everyone else up. So physically on an org chart, I recommend to my agency owners having the CEO at the bottom. It's not even in the middle, right? Because yes, you're all doing this together. They shouldn't be stacked. They should be sort of like circular, but at the bottom of the circle, having that leader. And for me, it just feels like a little bit more in line with what actually happens. Because the leader doesn't execute. The leader doesn't produce the products or services. The leader is just there to like provide vision and collect all the information and all of that and make informed decisions. But there is no company, there is no agency without the people. So that's what I would say. And if you believe that your job as a leader is to take credit and kind of step on other people and make sure that your legacy remains intact, then you shouldn't be a leader, because that's not what it's about, right? It's about developing, I'll steal from Brené Brown here. It's about seeing the potential in the people and the processes, and then having the courage to develop that potential. That's what a leader is. I love her definition. So yeah, that's my answer to that.
Definitely. Yeah, I think the idea of getting people in the right seats and then getting out of their way is
Jim Collins.
Yeah, I think it's a really good way to put it as well. And I think, it's interesting with regards to having the CEO at the bottom of that org chart. I like that because it reminds me of a conductor of an orchestra.
So you
the
got
conductor
it.
Is conducting, but the actual orchestra itself is playing the music and you're the one facilitating it. And I think that's a really nice image. And I think that's
something I like that analogy.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. And the conductor, I mean, even though the conductor might be physically a little bit higher, it's only so that everybody could see him or her.
Yeah, definitely. And the conductor is the one that it's the orchestra that plays that music, but also gets a lot of the credit for the work that's being done or the music that's being created. You know, the conductor is the one that syncs it all together. But, you know, if you've got a really good trumpet solo or you've got a violinist solo, they're the ones that are going to be lifted up on that pedestal as being the ones in that moment that are really celebrated. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I did something at my agency sort of along those lines. Was anytime that we won an award, the name of the company would be on the award. But if there was ever space for or an opportunity for like the person who was kind of like the project lead or the lead developer or whatever it was on that particular project that we won for, I would make sure that their name was on the award. And even if it wasn't, I would make sure that that award was sitting on their desk. And for me, that felt more like, you know, yes, we could have a wall of awards, right? And if it was really a group effort where there was no single quote unquote lead, like if there was really like an equally collaborative project, then it would go on the wall. But if it was very clear that one particular person was like the rock star of that project, it was important to me that they had that on their desk because I really wanted that recognition for them on an individual basis. And it wasn't about how many awards. We had tons of awards. It wasn't about another one, like a notch in my own cap. It was like, no, this, you should be proud of this and you should be able to display this. I don't know why I just thought of that, but it felt like maybe an example of what that looks like.
Definitely. No, that's amazing. I think that's a really cool way to do it. And imagine it from the point of view of the person involved. That would really lift them up and really make them feel special and also drive them to want to do more, to continually develop themselves.
Yeah. If awards were part of their love language,
yes.
Right? For someone else, that may not have been at all. And they'd be like, nah, I don't want that on my desk. I actually value a clear desk. And like, that helps me think more. But what I would really love is like, if you could, you know, buy me lunch tomorrow or something, great, right? So we would do that. It was really about like, finding out what drove individual people, because not the same things don't drive each of us, right? We're all different, we're all human.
Definitely. So have you seen any brands recently that you think have been really successful in adopting a more conscious approach?
Not that it's super recent, but you know, I'm always impressed with Dan Price from Gravity Payments. I mention him on different podcasts and I don't have any relationship with him, but I think what he's done, even in the face of ridicule of, you know, taking his salary and literally cutting it by some ridiculous percentage so that every single person in his company has a minimum of a $70,000 US starting salary. I mean, he was chastised for this by so many people. So many people, when he first announced that years ago, said, oh, you know, he's going to go out of business in a year. And the reality is that he has not only not gone out of business, they have grown exponentially. And what it conveys to his people is that, like, I value you and I'm part of the same team. I'm your peer. I might own the company. I might be the leader, but I'm your peer, right? Like, we're all in that circular org chart together. And I'm here to raise you up. And at the end of the day, the impact that had, talking about the ripple effect, is that there were people who were able to finish college degrees or pay off their college loans or buy a house or, right? Like all of these things that were milestones that were really important for those employees that they would not have otherwise been able to do if he had not taken that stand. To me, that's a great example. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, every company do that, because for every company, that's either maybe not an important thing, that's not what they prioritize, or they can come up with lots of other creative ways. But for me, I liked it because it spoke to equity better than any other example I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's a really, really good example. And yeah, to actually do that and to celebrate your team in that way and to explain to them in a way that how much you value them, I think is really nicely done. And so it's been awesome having you on. I've really enjoyed it. It's been really
Thanks,
good. I'd
Chris.
Like to do it again sometime because it just seems to have flown by because it's been so good. But is there anywhere people could find out more about you and what you do and some of the places that you are online?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I appreciate the conversation as well. I've had a great time. My website is klcampbell.com. And then also, if you wanted to check out Consciousness Leaders, that's just at consciousnessleaders.com.
Cool. And I'll put those links in the show notes along with anything else that other sort of social profiles and stuff like that people can find and get in touch. But yeah, it's been really good. I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thanks, Chris. It was my pleasure.
We've just put together a weekly brand tip video series, which is designed to help you to unlock your brand's potential and stand out from the competition. And if you're interested, if you just go to elementsbrandmanagement, all one word, .co.uk/weekly-brand-tips, sign up and you'll be delivered a 3 to 5 minute video a week straight to your inbox. I'll put a link in the show notes if you're interested. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to receive more, you can subscribe in all the usual places. We're talking iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Please, if you get a chance, rate and review. It helps the podcast to kind of get a bit more visibility and allows us to keep on producing these podcasts. Have a great week. Catch up soon. Keep those brands unified.